Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Malt Jar. Now, for the past few years, IDW have been publishing their own Judge Dredd comics in the States. You may have previously heard our interview with Eric Freitas and Ulysses Farinas about their Judge Dredd Blessed Earth series. Well, this week, our guest is Mark Russell, who's the writer behind the new Judge Dredd series from IDW. If you haven't heard his name before, then you've missed out on some absolutely top-flight comics. He's the author of God is Disappointed in You from Top Shelf, which was a modern retelling of the Bible with cartoons by Shannon Wheeler. He's also the author of Prez and the Flintstones for DC Comics. Now, the Flintstones is a very interesting take on the 1960s cartoon, where Mark really used it to reflect where things are at the moment in the world rather than just pay homage to a childhood memory. Really fascinating comics. He's also the writer of another cartoon comic book series, Snagglepuss, which really challenging read, really interesting, and it's going to be fascinating to see what he does with Judge Dredd. So it was great to have a chat with him over Skype about his plans for Dredd and what lurks inside Patrick Swayze block. Mark, you came to my attention certainly because of your work on the Flintstones for DC, and also your kind of your reboot of Snagglepuss from the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your career, how you've come to be writing on titles like that?
Yeah, I had written a book about the Bible called God is Disappointed in You, which was sort of a modern retelling of the Bible, but very condensed. Every book of the Bible condensed down to like 3 or 4 pages each. And somehow they got a hold of it at the DC offices. So when an opportunity came up to write sort of a satirical comic book about a teenager who becomes president called Prez, they thought of me and they called me and asked me if I'd be interested in writing it. And when you get a call like that, it's kind of hard to say no. So I agreed and I wrote that series, and they liked it well enough that they offered me the full set.
Because Prez was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was a series back in the 1970s, wasn't it?
Yeah, 1973 to 1974. Mm. It only ran for about 4 issues. It was actually created by Joe Simon, who is the guy who created Captain America, of course, strangely enough. But it's about a teenager who becomes president. At the time, I think it was dealt with a lot of the sort of the hippie paranoia in the 70s about all these. The fear was back then, I think, that 18-year-olds had just gotten the right to vote, so that hippies, they thought, were just going to take over the country and and turn it all into, like, you know, Altamont or something. And it never really panned out that way, but that was kind of what the conceit of the original comic. And mine was more kind of like the opposite, like, well, let's deal with a world where the hippies never took over and things have just gone from bad to worse.
Well, famously, you know, one thing that hippies don't do is bother to vote. So I think that fear was probably unfounded.
Yeah, that was the great sort of thing they failed to foresee. It's like, no, the hippies couldn't get it together enough to capitalize on their numbers.
So with something like the Flintstones, I've read some really interesting interviews online where you talk very much about the kind of the existential questions that a series like the Flintstones asks. For most people, those are quite big questions for the shoulders of a kid's cartoon from way back when. Why did you decide to bring these big issues to something like that? Is it the kind of contrast between expectations and delivery?
It was more just that was what I wanted to talk about. Mm. I wasn't really interested in the Flintstones. I didn't really care about the Flintstones. I took it on as kind of a mercenary project. But I thought, well, what is it that I do care about? And really it was about, like, the civilization, the foundational errors, the institutions that we've created, that how we've kind of outlived them, or to the degree to which they're not serving us anymore. So I thought, well, you know, I'm not really interested in the Flintstones, but I'm really interested in, you know, the fact that it's the world's first civilization. So I thought, well, I could use this as like a, as a prism to talk about my own thoughts on the world, which is kind of how I approach every title.
With something like the Flintstones, there was so much of the original cartoon, which was a reflection of the time, of that kind of the suburbanite world of the 1950s and 60s, you know, reflection of what I guess you call, in inverted commas, family values, and you know, the pressures of that went with that. Does that mean that things like that are always able to take that kind of thing that you're talking about? You know, you tell the story that you want to with this thing because it so easily reflects back what you put into it.
Yeah, and I think that it's just a great premise. And to me, though, what I like about the Flintstones is the fact that it's, you know, there's nothing else really like it in terms of, you know, a domestic drama based in the Stone Age, where they're figuring everything out for the first time, like television and electricity and, you know, division of labor. So I thought, well, that's just, it's just really ripe for a lot of commentary, it, you know, and cut them some slack, because if you're going to figure, if you're figuring things out for the first time, like religion and commerce, you're going to get a lot of things wrong. You're going to make a lot of innocent mistakes. Our mistakes are much less innocent because we've been at it for thousands of years. But that's really what I wanted to be about. Like, these people are kind of naive, but they've got a right to be.
Do you think there's a metaphor there for the kind of forgetfulness of modern society, that we have forgotten so much of what has gone before us, because we're so busy living in the now, so busy looking to the future, you know, what is new and fresh, that perhaps we forget the foundations of what's gone before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially that's kind of my take on America, in that, you know, we're a lot like bedrock, in that we have this simplistic naivete, that we imagine that we're the first people to ever encounter these problems, or the first people to ever make these decisions, not realizing that history is replete with, you know, horrible examples of other people who have tried these things and with terrible results.
Have you faced any blowback from the, I can't believe I'm using this phrase, Flintstones fans who were expecting something in a bit more of a traditional sense, in you know, kind of very homely, essentially comedy comics?
Not a lot. Although I will say, I got more people upset with me for messing with the Flintstones than I did for messing with the Bible. So I'm not sure what that says about our priorities, but but yeah, there was a little at first, and I think a lot of people, most people, were just sort of groaning and rolling their eyes, like, "Oh yes, just what the world needs—a gritty reboot of the Flintstones." You know, and I can understand that. I probably would have felt the same way if I hadn't been the one writing it. But I'm glad enough people gave it a chance to be pleasantly surprised by what I was able to do with it.
You mentioned at the top, you know, it's very much for you about what story you want to tell with these characters. So let's move on to the thing that we're here to talk about, which is the new Dread series that you're doing with IDW. What's the story that you want to tell with Judge Dredd?
Well, in a lot of ways, Judge Dredd is kind of the natural endpoint of the Flintstones.
This is a sentence I never thought I would hear.
Yeah, right. But it's completely intuitive. It's the consequence of all these poor decisions we've made about civilization coming to bear fruit. It's, you know, post-nuclear apocalypse, this heavily urbanized, industrial, authoritarian nightmare state. And it really is kind of a dark mirror reflecting back to American civilization, where it is heading if it continues on its current trajectory. So to me, that was, other than the fact that I've always just loved the character Judge Dredd, to me that was just like too good of an opportunity to pass up. And I tell the story, which I think is kind of the story of the United States right now, of like what happens when you neglect people for too long, or what happens when you treat people like second-class citizens and force them to live in the shadows, they don't disappear. They don't magically evaporate. Eventually, they'll form their own institutions without you, and it will invariably come back to bite you in the ass.
What do you think are some of, sorry to get a little bit political here, but what do you think are some of the mistakes that have been made that mean that, for you, Judge Dredd's world is an extrapolation of you know, the now, of you know, the issues that you're touching on in the Flintstones?
Well, primarily, and just a little background on the premise of the Judge Dredd series. It takes place in this sort of urban, mega block called the Patrick Swayze block. And it was designed originally to be sort of this model of affordable housing. You know, they were going to have like a factory inside there and, you know, a soy farm to help make synthetic foods for the people who lived in Patrick Swayze. And it's supposed to be like this sort of utopian project, much like, you know, our own city, inner city projects that were built in the 1930s. These were designed actually to be nice places to give poor people an affordable place to live. But because the political will wasn't there to sustain it over time, and the money went out of these places, the promises of jobs and benefits never really materialized, these places just kind of turned into little purgatories. And that's kind of what happens with the Patrick Swayze block in Mega City 1, because the factory never shows up, because the farm never materializes. The only asset these people have with which to make money is this waste tunnel that runs through the wall of Mega City 1 out to Cursed Earth. So they start having to ship in like sewage and toxic waste from other city blocks and other sectors. And so their building basically becomes a toxic waste dumping ground, and ultimately an invasion point for the mutants to get into Mega City 1 from Cursed Earth. So it's very much kind of a metaphor for how we have allowed, through urban decay and neglect of our own sort of marginalized populations, created this huge population of people who rightfully do not owe any loyalty to our country, and or in fact creating are forced to create their own institutions that the nation will later have to reckon with. Mm-hmm.
Because satire has always been a part of Judge Dredd, though often it's kind of bubbled away under the surface. How on the nose do you feel you have to be for a more American audience with something like this?
Yeah, Winston Churchill once said something I've kind of taken to heart as a writer. He's like, you don't make a point with a feather, you make your point with a sledgehammer. And yeah, that's something I believe in. I think that the substance is the best style, and it's better to like have like something that's really sort of true, expressed as bluntly and as in condensed a fashion as possible. To me, that's like much more powerful than subtlety or artistry. Mm. So I feel like it's not necessarily what I feel like Americans need. It's more, this is the way I express myself, because I feel like this is the way points need to be made.
Because with a character like Dredd, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast over the last 3 years, is about how so much of his character is the kind of opposite to the chaos around him. So he is the fixed point around which the world turns. You know, so often he is the unchanging thing.
Right.
What's your take on this story with Dredd? What part does he play? Is he a catalyst? Is he an antagonist, a protagonist? You know, where does he sit within your comic?
I think he's an idealist. He's somebody who has very specific vision of Mega City 1 and how it's supposed to operate and how he believes it does operate. And it's sort of eye-opening to him. It's sort of when he sees the way it actually does operate for these people that live within, in this forgotten corner of Mega City 1. these are people that he normally would be arresting or, you know, shoving into the ISO cubes, and now he's suddenly got to fight side by side with them against a mutant invasion. And so Dredd is forced to sort of like confront the fact that Mega City 1 is not the way he necessarily envisions it.
Mm. One thing that's kind of come out in conversations I've had with previous American creators who've worked on Dredd, such as Ulysses Farinas, Eric Freitas, and Dwayne, I'm going to mispronounce his surname, Dwayne Szczerski, was about how sometimes Dredd can be a little bit too close to the bone. In America, in Britain, it's a satire, you know, it's our satire of America, the way that we see America. But when you're actually in that culture,
right,
it can be a little bit too close to the bone, particularly at a time when issues of law enforcement and the police's attitude towards people of ethnic minorities is really at the forefront. How do you stop it being too raw, too difficult?
Well, I think in America, a lot of people view Dredd differently than they do in Britain. As you say, in Britain, he's viewed as the sort of like satire of America. But I think in America, there's a danger where if you make Dredd too brutal, you make him too too violent, people see him as an aspirational figure. They see him as like, they cheer for that. And so you have to be careful how you know, I want people to take away the right sort of message from this, which isn't that brutal violence is, you know, our only way out of this mess. I in fact tried to kind of like express the opposite. So I had to kind of, I didn't soften Dredd because Dredd ultimately has to be Dredd, but I make him sort of the David Copperfield of the story, where he's the observer of everything that's of his own life, kind of. You know, he sees he's sort of the catalyst for all the craziness happening around him.
I mean, what's your experience of Dredd? You know, how much have you read of his backstory and you know, 40 years of comics?
Yeah, I haven't read most of it. I read a bunch of obviously. Wagner's Dredd and Grant Morrison and Mark Millar's Dredd stories. And for me, kind of what, same with the Flintstones, what always attracted me to the character is the world building that goes into Mega City 1. To me, Mega City 1 is really kind of the star. Dredd is just kind of the natural consequence of building this this civilizational sort of megalomaniacal monster, which is Mega City 1.
And I'm curious as to how you came to be working on Dredd for IDW, because like you say, you've done stuff for DC Comics with Prez and the Flintstones, and you're working on Snagglepuss. Tell us a little bit about how it came to be.
I had to sort of aggressively pitch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dredd is the first comic that I actively went after, as opposed to having someone suggest to me or offer it to me. I really wanted to write a Dredd comic precisely because I found Mega City 1 such an incredibly rich viewing point of the future.
And I mean that's interesting to me because certainly when we've spoken to IDW in the past, you know, they've kind of pitched the kind of writers that they want to work on their Dredd comics. So it's very interesting that you've kind of gone out of your way to go for it. I mean,
it took a long time to convince them too.
Oh, really?
I mean, I pitched it probably over a year ago, and you know, a lot of email conversations and different ideas about what to do with the story. So I really had to kind of work to sell them on letting me write a Dredd series.
What was the thing that finally tipped them over the edge, if there was something?
I think it was the idea of him like having to sort of defend this poor city block against a mutant invasion. I had a lot of ideas. That was the one that they really seemed to like, because they kind of imagined it as being this Fort Apache, the Bronx story. And I think that's a way to do, as you said, sort of like satirize in America in a way that doesn't make Americans feel too defensive about it.
Mm.
Because he is a good guy and he's defending his territory from an invasion. So I think that's the way he presents satire of Americans to themselves, is you allow them to sort of you find a way to get the message in without making them too defensive about it.
Mm.
You allow them to like sort of take in the satire sideways as they still get to see themselves as the hero.
With the ancillary characters, without going into too much detail, not giving too much away, what's going to be your take on the citizens themselves? Because different writers have their own aspects. You know, some writers portray the citizens as kind of almost tragicomic characters who are essentially driven mad by the terrible world they live in. Others see them much more kind of. I don't know how to describe this, kind of units of not production but of interest. So each character, each citizen is this weird kind of individual all of their own. Others portray them as like this big mass of barely concealed rage. You're talking very much about a populace in this block who are brutalized, who are have been forgotten. Are we going to see characters that are full of pathos or more tragic comic, or you know, how are you planning on bringing those citizens to life?
I think that my portrayal is a little unique from what I've seen before in Dread comics, in that I portray the citizens as kind of sadly heroic. Like they've been neglected, they've been forced to sort of come to their own defense, and they're doing the best they can with the extremely limited resources that they have. Even the criminal gang that Dredd comes to the city block thinking is to arrest, basically end up being kind of heroic figures in the story. So this is kind of the central conceit, I think, behind a lot of comics, which I think lends itself to sort of fascism, and is the idea that people are just sort of either barbaric or helpless victims, and that what's really needed are a few rich white guys with powers to save all of humanity.
Hmm.
You know, that's basically the central conceit behind like the Avengers and like most comic books, especially superhero comics, is that people are mostly weak and powerless and blubbering, and that you really need an elite of a few superpowered individuals to save them from themselves or to save them from some foreign threat. In this case, it's really the citizens of Swayze Block who are the heroes and who actually come to the defense and help Judge Dredd and Judge Beanie, who was also in the story, help them defend Mega City 1, a city which has never really done anything for them, from this mutant invasion.
I mean, that's an interesting thing to consider, the idea of survival and loyalty. The you know that a system that has brutalized you doesn't deserve your loyalty, but people still maintain kind of basic trust in systems, even when that system is turning around and making their lives a merry hell. It's a very interesting metaphor for a lot of what's going on at the moment. I mean, do you see it as a kind of calling into question systems that don't actually protect people? You know, when they're busy brutalizing them, they're actually not protecting them.
Yeah, I this is kind of my biggest complaint about you know, American civilization in particular, but civilization in general as well, is that the institutions we have to serve us are usually about 30, 40 years out of date. And they're usually the last things to catch up to societal change. So, you know, like same-sex marriage only becomes legal about like a generation after most people think it should be, or, you know, most Americans are in favor of some sensible gun control laws, you know, ID checks, and, you know, not selling assault rifles to people on the street. But it will probably be another 20, 30 years before we see that enacted any sort of like institutional reform. And so we're always kind of the victims of our the lateness of our institutions, the inability of our institutions to keep up with societal change. And when a population gets so neglected by a civilization's institutions that it does that it not only fails to serve them, but in fact kind of victimizes them, then people drop out. They create their own institutions. You know, in a lot of ways, the reason why we created civilization was so that we could exist on a large in large numbers and, you know, coexist in large numbers without killing each other. But if society is going to be killing you or exiling you anyway, then you you have no reason to buy into these institutions. And when you don't buy into institutions, you have to create your own. And usually that means going back to some sort of like clan or family structure. And that's kind of what happens in Patrick Swayze block. Not really being citizens of Mega City One, they become a family again. They create their own sort of tight familial bonds within the building.
And in terms of kind of character beats with something like Dredd, as we've discussed, he can be something of a blank canvas. He can be, you know, a catalyst for a story, but not necessarily be a part of the story. For you, what are the kind of beats that you want to get with a character like Dredd, particularly when there's many people have very clear ideas of what they want him to be as a character?
Well, I think to me, the thing I like best about Dredd is he's someone you utterly cannot BS. He sees through every sort of perp's excuse. He sees through every lie. He's somebody who, for whatever his faults, could see right through, you know, the clutter and get to the heart of the matter. And that's what really kind of endears him to me. And I think that I try to bring that to the Patrick Swayze block, and that he sees the decay and sees the things going around there, and he doesn't buy that. I mean, he cuts through it to see that these people are in fact just sort of victims of their circumstances.
It's interesting that you know, talking about the way that Dredd reacts to the people within the block, it's kind of a theme that was explored a little bit in the Dredd movie, the 2012 Dredd movie, where Dredd is confronted by a lot of the consequences of shutting people up in big blocks and expecting them just to get on with their lives and behave themselves. Was that an influence? Have you seen the film?
Yes, and in fact, it was an influence. And in fact, I kind of see this comic as sort of a counterpoint to that.
Hmm.
Again, it was about Dredd and it was about Dredd sort of like making war on a block, about having to hit him against all the citizens of this city block. And for me, that's again, that sort of reinforces that notion that the purpose of power is not to help people or empower them, but to keep them in line. And what I wanted to do is kind of tell a story where he has to make war on a block, but he has to do so on behalf of the people who live there, and that the people who live there are you know, have their own lives and they have their own sort of ability to think and act on their own behalf. But they're not just sort of like either passive receptacles of his salvation, nor are they these sort of barbaric, just sort of animals that he has to fight. They're living, breathing people that will in fact are needed to come to his defense.
Mm. I mean, you make a good point about the nature of power there and the nature of authority, that so often people confuse power with respect, and actually without respect you don't really have power, you just have force. And again, that feels very much like a metaphor for the way that people are beginning to perceive certain types of law enforcement. Because you've already referred to people taking Dredd as a good thing, you know, as a way forward. When you've got police forces in the States putting Punisher decals onto their patrol cars and things like that.
Yeah, not a good sign.
Yeah, yeah. So is this, you know, a treatise on power and respect, and like I said, you know, the idea that people need to buy into a system in order for it to be humane.
Yeah, there's a phrase that keeps popping up in the background in the comic in Latin, "Salus populi e suprema es lex," which means the good of the people is the whole of the law, roughly translated. And to me, that's really sort of the theme of the piece, is that the law and order isn't worth anything if it doesn't actually help people's lives. If it's not actually helping the people it's supposed to serve live better lives, then what good is it?
I mean, that's a very good point. It's one thing you often see when people are discussing the nature of Dredd. They go, well, you know, he's brutal, but he's fair. You know, he only follows the law. We go, it's a pretty brutal law that he's following in the first place. You know, if your defense is, well, you know, that's what's written down, then, you know, anything can be written down.
How many legal systems, you know, in history that we now condemn people for fault? I mean, that's essentially what Eichmann was convicted of, was being good at following the law.
And in terms of the evolution of this project, is this very much the story that you wanted to tell at the beginning, or has it evolved over the course of creating it?
Yeah, it always evolves over the course of creating it. In fact, sometimes I don't even realize what I've written until it's done, and then I have to go back and change to let it be what it needs to be, as opposed to what I originally tried to cram it into being. But yeah, it really is. I think most of the stories, at least the ones I feel like I've done well, end up being kind of human stories that work on an emotional level as well as just sort of a basic plot, or, you know, have something, some intellectual point I want to say. I think the ones that really mean a lot to me, and the ones that I think are the most successful, are ones that actually get you to sort of emotionally connect to the characters. And I think that people will be surprised at how much they relate to the what would normally be the background characters in the story, the citizens of Swayze Block and what they're going through.
Is there a particular reason why you've chose Patrick Swayze as the name of your block?
Not really. I mean, it was just kind of a random thing. Just the first name I thought of, because I know they name all, you know, the blocks after famous people. It was just the first one that came to my head. But at the same time, now looking back on it, I'd written in this scene that didn't make it into the final comic, where one of the citizens of Swayze Block is trying to inspire the other ones, and he invokes this ancient, I don't know too much about history, but this block was named after an ancient warrior who, you know, brought justice to the roadhouse, you know, or something to that effect. They go into battle yelling Patrick Swayze. I eventually wrote that out because it just seemed too corny. But I think that was maybe what I was thinking subconsciously, was that he's this sort of, again, sort of heroic, aspirational figure that doesn't really exist.
I want to come back to talking about franchise comics, because, you know, you talk about these are the stories you want to tell, but you're telling them with characters that already exist. Is it easier to throw up the contrasts to have people buy in than have to create a whole new world in which to tell the same kind of story? Is there a kind of shorthand you can skip across because people are already familiar with these characters?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it's one of the big advantages of doing it, is you borrow on the cultural equity of whatever property you're writing. You jump into a property that people already kind of know the backstory. They already kind of know things about the characters. So a lot of that sort of frame building is done for you. So then you can really just focus on telling the story you want to tell, or maybe surprising them, because they think they know more about the world than they do, and you are telling them something about, you're shining a light on the part of the world that they hadn't seen before. So yeah, having people already invested in the characters and the cultural equity gives you a lot of possibilities in storytelling. Definitely more than if you had to create something from scratch and get them to buy into it from the, you know, completely cold.
Well, I guess you can just, rather than having to walk people through it, you just go straight to the sprint of the actual story.
Exactly. Yeah, you drop them right. You can just drop them right in, and they know what's going on. Plus, you don't have to like sell them like, oh, this is something worth your while. This is something you really ought to read, which is always kind of a hard thing to do with new properties. You take an audience that already exists and show them something that surprises them, shocks them a little from what they're used to in that franchise. Mm.
In an interview you did online, when you were talking about comics as they are now, what you're hoping to say to a comics audience, you say you want audiences to demand good writing from their comics. Where do you think the state of comics writing is at the moment in the kind of mainstream American industry?
Well, to be honest, I think a lot of it is just sort of reminds me of professional wrestling. You know, it's like, well, who is the superhero not fought in a while?
Yeah.
Who have we not seen them team up with yet? And it's just a, you know, like a square dance of violence. It's like, well, okay, we haven't had them fight. And to me, that's not really satisfying storytelling. It's not very imaginative. It's not really using the potential of the medium to talk about the world in which we live in, and, you know, use it as like a, because to me, it's like the greatest medium for subversion ever created. Because it's so democratic, it doesn't cost a lot to. If you want to make a movie, you've got to convince some producer to sink like $20 million in your movie, and then you got a lot of other people determining. You know, you got 13 other people going through the script. You've got an editor who chops your movie down into half its original length, and so the ability to like sort of talk directly to people isn't really as easy in film. Whereas in comics, you can kind of tell a visual story like a movie does, which is powerful and easily digestible and accessible to people. But you have complete control over what that person sees and reads. And because it doesn't cost a lot to put out comics, and because it's not, high risk for the publisher, you can tell a lot crazier or a lot more dangerous of a story than you could if you're making a big budget movie or something. So why people aren't taking advantage of that and actually telling stories that sort of are shocking or a little revolutionary that aren't subversive, I don't know. But to me, that seems like the natural purpose of the medium is to give them those sort of like really thought out like treatises on the world that they can get through any sort of popular entertainment medium.
We've talked about how this is the story that you want to tell with this character, that you know you had to pitch it to IDW. Is that you done now? Have you told your Dread story? Are you moving on to other things? Are there other stories in this world that you'd like to tell?
Oh, I would tell. There's a lot of other stories in this world I'd like to tell. In fact, this is like one of like five different ideas I pitched to them. I'd love to be able to do some of the other ideas at some point.
And have you seen any finished artwork?
I'm sorry? Have you finished artwork?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. The artwork's already halfway into issue number two. And it looks great. Mm-hmm. Max Dunbar is doing the artwork. And it just looks fantastic. It's very sort of, it really captures like the sort of urban emptiness. Sort of like, it reminds me, I don't want to sound too pretentious, although it's probably too late for that. But it really reminds me of like the Nighthawks and the sort of like urban sort of loneliness paintings of the American Gothic in the 1940s and 50s, and it's really beautifully done, filled with like dead bodies and mutants and gunplay. I'm really happy with the art.
Mm. I mean, that's something that sometimes kind of gets forgotten is just how much the physical environment of somewhere like Mega City One, as you say, is a character in of itself, but the emptiness of this place, you know, these vast post-urban landscapes, there's a metaphor there for your kind of Rust Belt, your Detroits and things like that. But
right.
That in itself creates... A real loneliness for a system based on brutality. So the environment is brutal and the system that maintains it is brutal as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It reinforces the narrative that, you know, all these institutions, all this civilization has built up something that doesn't really serve the people it was intended to help.
Well, many thanks to Mark for chatting about his Judge Dredd series. Issue one of that is out next week from IDW. You can go along to your local comic book store and order a copy, as well as getting it digitally from Comixology. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time, Earthlets, with more from the universe of 2000 AD, beamed direct into your aural senses. Until then, Splendid Verthrin.
Alert! 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 Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000 AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.